style dress with its low waist and knee-length fringed skirt. She turned right and left so the fringes lifted and twirled.
Long, long pearls, masses of them, a matching cloche hat, and a mile-long silver cigarette holder.
Still holding it, she spun around.
Imagine where this dress has been, dancing the Charleston at some fabulous party or some wild speakeasy, riding in a Model T, drinking bathtub gin and bootleg whiskey.
She spun again.
The woman who wore this, she was daring, even a little reckless, and absolutely sure of herself.
It suits you.
Thanks, because it's fabulous. You know, with what we found and cataloged already, you could have a fashion museum right up here.
I'll take the option of a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. Men would be men, she supposed, and she had no desire to change that status.
Okay, not here, but you definitely have enough for a fantastic display in Hester's museum. One day.
Unlike Eli, she carefully folded the dress with tissue.
I checked the telescope before I came up. He's still a no-show.
He'll be back.
I know it, but I hate waiting.
Belatedly, she walked over to kiss him.
Why aren't you writing? It's early for you to stop for the day.
I finished the first draft, so I'm taking a break, letting it cook a little.
You finished it!
She threw her arms around his neck, shook her hips.
That's fantastic! Why aren't we celebrating?
A first draft isn't a book.
Of course it is! It's just a book waiting for refinement. How do you feel about it?
Like it needs refinement, but pretty good. The end went quicker than I'd expected. Once I really saw it, it moved.
We're absolutely celebrating. I'm gonna make something amazing for dinner and put a bottle of champagne from the butler's pantry on ice.
Thrilled for him, she dropped onto his lap.
I'm so proud of you.
You haven't read it yet. Just one scene.
It doesn't matter. You finished it. How many pages?
Right now, 543.
You wrote 543 pages? And you did that through a personal nightmare? You did that during a major transition in your life, through continuing conflict and stress and upheaval. If you're not proud of yourself, you're either annoyingly modest or stupid. Which is it?
She lifted him, he realized. She just lifted him. I guess I'd better say I'm proud of myself.
Much better.
She kissed him noisily, then wrapped her arms around his neck again.
By this time next year, your book will be published, or on its way to publication. Your name's going to be cleared, and you'll have all the answers to all the questions hanging over you in Bluff House.
I like your optimism.
Not optimism alone. I did a tarot reading.
Oh, well then, let's spend my staggering advance on a trip to Belize.
I'll take it.
She leaned back.
Optimism and a tarot reading equal a very powerful force, Mr. Mired in Reality, especially when you add effort and sweat. Why Belize?
No clue. It was the first thing to pop into my mind.
Often the first things are the best things. Anything interesting today?
Nothing that pertains to the dowry.
Well, we still have plenty to go through. I'll start on another trunk.
She worked alongside him, then decided to change gears, abandon the trunk, and work her way through an old chest of drawers.
It was amazing what people kept, she thought.
Old table runners, faded pieces of embroidery or needlepoint, children's drawings on paper so dry she feared it would break and crumble in her hands. She found a collection of records she thought might be from the same era as the gorgeous coral dress. Amused, she uncovered a gramophone, wound it up, and set the record to play. She grinned over at Eli as the scratchy, tinny music filled the room. She did some jazz hands, a quick shimmy, and had him grinning back. You ought to put the dress on. She winked at him.
Maybe later.
She danced back to the chest of drawers, opened the next drawer. She made piles. So much unused or partially used fabric, she noted, arranging them in neat piles. Someone had used the chest of drawers for sewing at one time, she thought. Storing silks and brocades, fine wools and satins. Surely some lovely dresses had come from this, and others simply planned and never realized. When she reached the bottom drawer, it stuck halfway open. After a couple of tugs, she lifted out scraps of fabric and an envelope of pins, an old pincushion fashioned to resemble a ripe red tomato, a tin box of various threads.
Oh, patterns! From the 30s and 40s.
Carefully, she lifted them out.
Shirtwaists and evening gowns? Oh, God, just look at this sundress!
You go ahead. She barely spared him a glance.
They're wonderful. This whole project has made me wonder why I never tried vintage clothing before. I wonder if I can make this sundress.
Make a dress? He flicked her a glance. I thought that's what stores were for.
In that yellow silk, with the little violets maybe. I've never sewn a dress, but I'd love to try it.
Be my guest.
I could even try on that old sewing machine we found up here, just to keep it all vintage.
Imagining it, she stacked the patterns, turned back to the empty drawer.
It's stuck,
she muttered.
Maybe something's caught.
Angling herself, she reached in, searched the bottom of the drawer above for a blockage, then the sides, then the back.
I guess it's just jammed or warped or...
Then her fingers trailed over what felt like a curve of metal.
Something's back here in the corner,
she told Eli.
In both corners,
she discovered. I'll look in a minute.
I can't see why it's hanging up the drawer. It's just...
Impatient, she pushed at the corners, and the drawer slid out, nearly into her lap. Eli glanced up again at her surprised...
Oh!
Are you okay?
Yes, just bumped my knees a little. It's like a compartment, Eli. A secret compartment in the back of this drawer.
Yeah, I found a few of those in desks, and one in an old buffet.
But did you find anything in them like this?
She held up a wooden box, deeply carved with a stylized looping L. Not so far. Intrigued now, he stopped his inventory when she brought the box to the table.
It's locked.
Maybe the keys in the collection we've been compiling, more of which I found in the hidden drawer in the old buffet. She glanced over at the jar they were using to store keys found during the third floor rummage, then just pulled a pin out of her hair.
Let's try this first.
He had to laugh. Seriously? You're going to pick the lock with a hairpin?
It's the classic way, isn't it? And how complicated can it be?
She bent the pin, slid it in, turned, wiggled, turned. Since she seemed determined to open the box, Eli started to get up for the jar, then heard the quiet click. You've done this before?
Not since I was 13 and lost the key to my diary, but some skills stay with you.
She lifted the lid, found a cache of letters. They'd come across letters before, most of them as long and winding as the distance between Whiskey Beach and Boston, or New York. Some from soldiers gone to war, she thought, or daughters married and settled far away. She hoped for love letters, as she'd yet to find any.
The paper looks old,
she said as she carefully took them out.
Written with a quill, I think, and yes, here's a date. June 5th, 1821. Written to Edwin Landon.
That would have been Violetta's brother. Eli pushed his own work aside, shifted to look. He'd have been in his 60s. He died and... He scoured his mind for the family history he'd pored over.
I think 1830-something. Early in that decade, anyway. Who's it from? James J. Fitzgerald of Cambridge.
Eli noted it down. Can you read it?
I think so. Sir... I regret the unfortunate circumstances and tenor of our meeting last winter. It was not my intention to intrude upon your privacy or your goodwill. While you made your opinions and decision most abundantly clear at that time, I feel it imperative I write to you now on behest of my mother and your sister, Violetta Landon Fitzgerald.
Abra stopped, eyes huge as they met Eli's.
Eli?
Keep reading. He rose to go study the letter over her shoulder. There's no record in the family history of her marrying or having children. Keep reading. He repeated.
As I communicated to you in January, your sister is most grievously ill. Our situation continues to be difficult with the debts incurred at my father's death 2 years past. My employment as a clerk for Andrew Grandin, Esquire, brings me an honest wage, and with it I have well supported my wife and family. I am now, of course, seeing to my mother's needs in addition to attempting to reconcile the debts. I do not and would not presume to approach you for financial aid on my own behalf, but must again do so in your sister's name. As her health continues grave, the doctors urge us to remove her from the city and to the shore, where they believe the sea air would be most beneficial. I fear she will not live to see another winter should the current situation continue. It is your sister's most heartfelt wish to return to Whiskey Beach, to return to the home where she was born and which holds so many memories for her. I appeal to you, sir, not as an uncle. You have my word I will never ask for consideration for myself due to that familial connection. I appeal to you as a brother whose only sister's wish is to come home.
Mindful of its fragility, Abra set the letter aside.
Oh, Eli.
She left. Wait, let me think. He straightened, began to wander the room. There's no record of her marriage, any children, of her death, not in family records anyway.
And I've never heard of this Fitzgerald connection. Her father had records destroyed, didn't he?
That's what's been passed down, yeah. She ran off, and he not only cut her off, he basically eliminated all records.
He must have been a small, ugly man.
Tall, dark, and handsome, in his portraits, Eli corrected. But you mean inside. And you're probably right.
So, Violetta left here, estranged from the family, and went to Boston or Cambridge, and they disowned her. At some point she married, had children, at least this son. Was Fitzgerald the survivor of the Calypso? An Irish name, not a Spanish one. He could have been impressed. Is that the term? Or just as likely she met and married him after she left home. Was there really never any attempt to reconcile until this? Until she was dying?
I don't know. Some of the stories speculate she ran away with a lover. Most just speculate she ran off after her lover was killed by her brother. During this research, I've come across a couple of speculations she was shipped off because she was pregnant and then disowned because she wouldn't fall in line. Basically, they erased her so there are no family records or mentions of her after the late 1770s.
Now that we have this, we can do a search for James J. Fitzgerald, Cambridge, and work back from there. Eli, the next letter. It's written in September of the same year. Another plea. She's worse, and the debts are mounting up. He says his mother's too weak to hold a pen and write herself. He writes her words for... Oh, it breaks my heart. Brother, let there be forgiveness. I do not wish to meet God with this enmity between us. I beseech you, with the love we once shared so joyfully, to allow me to come home to die, to allow my son to know my brother, the brother I cherished and who cherished me before that horrible day. I have asked God to forgive me for my sins and for yours. Can you not forgive me, Edwin, as I forgive you? Forgive me and bring me home.
She wiped tears from her cheeks.
But he didn't, did he? The third letter, the last, it stated January 6th. Violetta Landon Fitzgerald departed this world on this day at the hour of 6. She suffered greatly in the last months of her time on this earth. This suffering, sir, is on your hands. May God forgive you, for I shall not. On her deathbed, she related to me all that occurred in those last days of August in the year 1774. She confessed her sins to me. The sins of a young girl, and yours, sir. She suffered and died wishing for the home of her birth and her blood, and for the embrace of family, refused her. I will not forget, nor will any of my blood. You have your riches and hold them dearer than her life. You will not see her again, nor meet with her in heaven. For your actions you are damned, as are all the Landons who spring from you.
She set the last letter with the others.
I agree with him.
By all accounts, Edwin Landon and his father were hard men, uncompromising.
I'd say these letters bear that out.
And more. We don't know if Edwin responded, or what he wrote if he did, but it's clear both he and Violetta sinned in August of 1774, 5 months after the Calypso wrecked on Whiskey Beach. We need to search for information on James Fitzgerald. We need a date of birth.
You think she was pregnant when she left, or was disowned?
I think that's the kind of sin men like Roger and Edwin Landon would condemn. And I think, given the times, their rise in society, in status, in business, a daughter pregnant with a child of someone less, someone outside the law, untenable. He walked back to her, studied the letter again, the signature. James would have been a common name, a popular one. Sons are often named for fathers.
You think her lover, the seaman from the Calypso, was James Fitzgerald?
No, I think her lover was Nathaniel James Broom, and he survived the wreck of his ship, along with Esmeralda's dowry.
Broom's middle name was James?
Yeah. Whoever Fitzgerald was, I'm betting she was pregnant when she married him.
Broom might have run off with her, changed his name.
Eli ran a hand down her hair absently, remembering how she'd given the doomed schoolteacher and long-ago Landon a happy ending. I don't think so. The man was a pirate, fairly notorious. I don't see him settling down quietly in Cambridge, raising a son who becomes a clerk. And he'd never have let the Landons have the dowry. Edwin killed him. That's how I see it. Killed him, took the dowry, tossed his sister out.
For money? At the bottom of it, they cast her out, erased her for money?
She took for a lover a known brigand, a killer, a thief, a man who would certainly have been hanged if caught. The Landons are accumulating wealth, social prestige, and some political power. Now their daughter, whom they'd have married to the son of another wealthy family, is ruined. They may be ruined as well if it becomes known that they harbored or had knowledge of a wanted man being harbored. She, the situation, her condition, needed to be dealt with.
Dealt with? Dealt with?
I'm not agreeing with what was done. I'm outlining their position and probable actions.
Lawyer Landon. No, he wouldn't be one of my favorite people.
Lawyer Landon's just stating their case. The case of men of that era, that mindset. Daughters were property, Abra. It wasn't right, but it's history. Now, instead of being an asset, she was a liability.
I don't think I can listen to this.
Get a grip on yourself, he suggested when she pushed to her feet. I'm talking about the late 18th century.
You sound like you're okay with it.
It's history, and the only way I can try to get a clear picture is to think logically and not emotionally.
I like emotion better.
You're good at it. So they'd use that, too, he decided. Both emotion and logic. Okay, what does your emotion tell you happened?
That Roger Landon was a selfish, unfeeling bastard, and his son, Edwin, a heartless son of a bitch. They had no right to throw away a life the way they threw away Violetta's, and it's not just history, it's people.
Abra, you realize we're arguing about someone who died nearly 200 years ago?
And your point?
He rubbed his hands over his face. Why don't we say this? We've reached the same basic conclusion. Part of that conclusion is Roger and Edwin Landon were cold-hearted, hard-minded, opportunistic bastards.
That's a little better.
Her eyes narrowed.
Opportunistic. You really believe not only the dowry existed, not only that it came ashore with Broom, but that Edwin killed Broom and stole the dowry?
Well, it was already stolen property, but yeah, I think he found it, took it.
Then where the hell is it?
I'm working on that. All this is moot if the basic premise is wrong. I need to start tracing Violetta's son.
How?
I can do it myself, which would take time because it's not my field, but there are plenty of tools, some good genealogy sites. Or I can save time and contact someone whose field it is.
I know a guy.
We were friendly, once. She understood. Someone who'd turned his back on Eli. And she realized, however logical his argument, he understood what Violetta had gone through. He knew what it was to be cast aside, condemned, ignored.
Are you sure you want to do that?
I thought about doing it weeks ago, but I put it off because... No, I don't really want to do it. But I'll try to take a page out of Violetta's book. When the chips are down, it's better to forgive. She moved to him, took his face in her hands.
You're going to get that celebration after all. In fact, I'm going to go down and start on that. We should put those letters somewhere safe.
I'll take care of it.
Eli? Why do you think Edwin kept the letters?
I don't know, except Landons tend to keep things. The chest of drawers may have been his, and putting them in that hidden niche might have been his way of keeping them, but not seeing them.
Out of sight, out of mind, like Violetta.
Abra nodded.
What a sad man he must have been.
Sad? Eli thought when she left. He doubted it. He thought Edwin Landon would have been a self-satisfied son of a bitch. No family tree grew without a few bent branches, he supposed. He used his laptop to search for the contact number for an old friend, then took out his phone. Forgiveness, he discovered, didn't come easy. But expediency did. Maybe forgiveness would follow, and if not, he'd still have answers. 28. With her hair bundled up, her sleeves hiked to her elbows, Abra looked up from layering slices of potato in a casserole dish when Eli came into the kitchen.
How'd that go?
Awkward.
I'm sorry, Eli.
He only shrugged. More awkward for him than for me, I think. Actually, I knew his wife better. She's a paralegal at my old firm. He teaches history at Harvard and sidelines in genealogy. We played basketball a couple times a month, downed a few beers here and there, that's all.
That was enough, to Abra's mind, to deserve a little loyalty and compassion.
Anyway, after the initial stumbling around and that strained and over-enthusiastic, "Good to hear from you, Eli!" he agreed to do it. In fact, I think he feels guilty enough to make it a priority.
Good. It helps balance the scales.
Then, why do I want to punch something? She considered the potato she'd just sliced in several vicious whacks. She knew exactly how he felt.
Why don't you go pump some iron instead? Work up an appetite for stuffed pork chops, scalloped potatoes, and green beans amandine. A manly celebration meal.
Maybe I will. I should feed the dog.
Already done. She's now stretched out on the terrace, watching people play in what she considers her yard.
I should give you a hand.
Do I look like I need one?
He had to smile. No, you don't.
Go. Pump it up. I like my man ripped.
In that case, I might be a while. He sweated out the frustration and the depression that wanted to walk hand in hand. And once he'd showered off the dregs, he found he could let it go. He had what he needed, an expert to solve a problem. If guilt helped solve the problem, it didn't and shouldn't matter. On impulse, he took Barbie for a walk into the village. It struck him that people spoke to him, called him by name, asked how he was doing without any of the wariness, the awkwardness he'd become so accustomed to. He bought a bouquet of tulips the color of eggplant. On the way back, he waved to Stony Trivet as the old man strolled toward the village pub.
Buy you a beer, boy?
Not tonight, Eli called back. I've got dinner waiting, but keep a stool open for me Friday night.
You got it.
And that, Eli realized, made Whiskey Beach home. A stool at the bar on Friday night, a casual wave, dinner on the stove, and knowing the woman you cared for would smile when you gave her purple tulips. And she did. The tulips stood along with candles on the terrace table, with the surf crashing, the stars winking on. Champagne bubbled, and right there, right then, Eli felt all was right with his world. He'd come back, he thought, shed the too tight skin, turned the corner, rounded the circle, whatever analogy worked. He was where he wanted to be, with the woman he wanted to be with, and doing what made him feel whole and real. He had colored lights and wind chimes on the terrace, pots of flowers, and a dog napping at the top of the beach steps.
This is...
Abra lifted her eyebrows.
What?
Just right. Just exactly right. And when she smiled at him again, it was just exactly right. Later, when the house lay quiet and his body still thrummed from hers, he couldn't say why sleep eluded him. He listened to the rhythm of Abra's breathing and the muffled yips from Barbie as she dreamed, he imagined, of chasing a bright red ball into the water. He listened to Bluff House settle and imagined his grandmother wakened late at night by noises that didn't fit the pattern. Restless, he rose, thought to go down for a book. Instead, he climbed up to the third floor to the stack of ledgers. He sat at the card table with his legal pad, his laptop. For the next 2 hours, he read, calculated, checked dates, cross-referenced from household accounting to business accounting. When his head throbbed, he rubbed his eyes and kept going. He'd studied law, he reminded himself. Criminal law, not business law. not accounting or management. He should pass this to his father, to his sister, but he couldn't let go of it. At 3 in the morning, he pushed away. His eyes felt as though he'd scrubbed his corneas with sandpaper, and a toothy vice clamped over his temples and the back of his neck. But he thought he knew. He thought he understood. Wanting time to process, he went downstairs, dug aspirin out of the kitchen cabinet. He downed them with water he drank like a man dying of thirst before walking out onto the terrace. The air glided over him like a balm, and smelled of sea and flowers. Starlight showered, and the moon, waxing toward full, pulsed against the night sky. And on the cliff, above the rocks where men had died, whiskey beach light circled its hopeful beam.
Eli?
In a robe as white as the moon, Abra stepped out.
Can't sleep?
No. The air rippled her robe, danced through her hair, and the moonlight glowed in her eyes.
When, he wondered, had she become so beautiful? I have some tea that might help.
She came to him, automatically reached up to rub at his shoulders, seek out tension. When her eyes met his, her look of concern turned to one of curiosity.
What is it?
A lot of things. A lot of big, unexpected things. In one even more unexpected bunch.
Why don't you sit down? I'll work on these shoulders and you can tell me.
No. He took her hands, held them between his. I'll just tell you. I love you too.
Oh, Eli.
She gripped his fingers with hers.
I know.
Not the reaction he'd expected. In fact, he thought it was a little irritating. Really?
Yes. But God...
Her breath caught as she wrapped her arms around him, held tight with her face pressed to his shoulder.
God, it's so wonderful to hear you say it. I told myself it'd be okay if you didn't say it, but I didn't know it would feel like this to hear it. How could I know? If I had, I'd have hounded you like a wolf to drag those words out of you.
If I didn't say it, how do you know?
When you touch me, when you look at me, when you hold me, I feel it.
She looked up at him, eyes drenched.
And I couldn't love you this much without you loving me back. I couldn't know how right it is to be with you if I didn't know you loved me.
He brushed at her hair, all those tumbled curls, and wondered how he'd ever gotten through a single day without her. So, you were just waiting for me to catch up?
I was just waiting for you, Eli. I think I've been waiting for you ever since I came to Whiskey Beach. Because you're all that was missing.
You're what's right. He laid his lips on hers.
What's just right?
It scared the hell out of me at first.
I know, me too.
But now? Tears spilled out of mermaid eyes and sparkled in the moonlight.
I feel absolutely courageous. What about you?
I feel happy. Struck with tenderness, he kissed the tears away. I want to make you as happy as I am.
You do. Oh, it's a good night. Or day, I guess. Another really good day.
She pressed her lips to his again.
Let's give each other lots more good days.
That's a promise. And Landons keep their promises, she thought. Overwhelmed, she wrapped around him again.
We found each other, Eli. Just where we were supposed to.
Is that a karma thing? She drew back to laugh up at him.
You're damn right it is. Is this why you couldn't sleep? Because you suddenly accepted your karmic path and wanted to tell me?
No. Actually, I didn't know I was going to say it until you walked out here. One look at you and it blew through me, all of it.
We should go back to bed.
Her smile was full of promise.
I bet I can help you sleep.
There's another reason I love you.
You always have really good ideas.
But as he took her hand, he remembered.
Jesus,
I got caught up.
A habit of yours.
No, I mean I forgot why I came out here in the first place, why I couldn't sleep. I went up and started working on the books, the letters, the accounts.
All those numbers and columns?
Instinctively, she reached up to rub at temples she imagined ached. You should have nodded off inside 5 minutes. I found it, Abra. I found Esmeralda's dowry.
What? How? My God, Eli, you're a genius!
She grabbed him, circled, and swayed.
Where?
It's here.
But here where? And do I need a shovel? Oh, we have to take it to Hester, to your family. It needs to be protected, and there must be a way to trace Esmeralda's descendants, make them a part of the discovery. Hester's Museum! Can you imagine what this means to Whiskey Beach?
Talk about running with it, he commented.
Well, Eli, think of it. Treasure unearthed after more than 2 centuries. You could write another book about it. And just think of all the people who'll be able to see it now. Your family could lend pieces to the Smithsonian, the Met, the Louvre.
That's what you do? Donate, lend, display?
Well, yes. It belongs to the ages, doesn't it?
One way or the other. Fascinated by her, he studied her glowing face. Don't you want it? Even a piece of it?
Oh, well, now that you mention it, I wouldn't say no to one tasteful piece.
She laughed, spun in a circle.
Oh, just think of the history, the mystery solved, the magic uncorked.
She stopped, laughed again.
Where the hell is it, and how fast can we get it and secure it?
He turned her, gestured. We've already got it. It's already secured. Abra, it's Bluff House.
What? I don't understand.
My ancestors weren't as altruistic or philanthropic as you. They not only kept it, they spent it. He gestured toward the house. Built not just on whiskey, but pirate booty. The expansion of the distillery, the timing of it, the expansion of the house, those first innovations, the lumber, the stone, the labor.
You're saying they sold the dowry to expand the business, to build the house?
In pieces, I think, if I'm reading all the accounting right. Over a generation or two, starting with the cold-hearted Roger and Edwin.
Oh. I have to adjust.
She pushed at her hair, and, he imagined, pushed back her excited thoughts of museums and sharing.
Bluff House is Esmeralda's dowry.
Essentially. It doesn't add up otherwise. Not if you really dig into the expenditures, the revenue. Family lore says gambling. They liked to gamble, and they were lucky. And they were smart businessmen. Then the war, the buildup of the country. All of that, yeah, but gamblers need a stake.
You're sure it was the dowry?
It's logical. I want Tricia to take a look, to analyze, and I want to hear back on James Fitzgerald. It adds up, Abra. It's in the walls, the stone, the glass, the gables. They accounted for it, in their own way, Roger and Edwin, because they considered it theirs.
Yes,
she nodded at that.
Men who could cut a daughter, a sister, so completely out of their lives would consider it theirs. I see that.
Broom came with it to Whiskey Beach, and Whiskey Beach was theirs. They gave him shelter, and he disgraced their daughter, their sister. So they took what he stole and built what they wanted.
Ruthless,
she murmured.
Ruthless and wrong, but it's poetic too, isn't it?
She leaned her head on his shoulder.
And, in a way, a happy ending. How do you feel about it?
Maybe a lot of it was built on blood and betrayal. You can't change history, so you live with it. The house weathered it, so did the family.
It's a good house. It's a good family. I think both more than weathered history.
Ruthless and wrong, he repeated. And I can be sorry for that. Lindsay's murder was ruthless and wrong. All I can do about any of it is try to find out the truth. Maybe that's justice.
That's why I love you,
she said quietly.
Just that. It's too early to call Tricia, and I don't think either of us is going to get any more sleep. I'm going to make us some eggs.
That's why I love you. On a laugh, he turned to her, pulled her in, and as his gaze drifted over her head, he went still. He saw, down at the point, a shimmer of light.
Wait.
He moved quickly to the telescope, peered through. Straightening, he looked at Abra. He's back. With a hand gripped on his arm, she looked for herself.
I kept wishing for this, so it could be done and over. But now that it is...
She took a moment to evaluate.
I feel the same way. Now we do something.
She sent him a cool, fierce smile.
Let's break some eggs.
While she did so, literally, and Eli made coffee, It struck him it might have been any morning, even if it started at barely 5 a.m. Two people in love, and that was new and fresh and energizing, fixing breakfast. All you had to do was leave out the murder.
We could call Corbett,
Abra said, rinsing berries in the sink.
He could have that conversation.
Yeah, we could.
And that wouldn't accomplish much, a conversation over a man I saw in a bar.
A man Lindsay cheated with, who bought property in Whiskey Beach.
Which lawyer Landon tells me won't hold up in court.
Eli studied her, set her coffee on the counter. It's a step.
A small one on a very slow walk, and one that lets Susskind know you know. Doesn't that forearm him?
A step that may spook him, even might influence him to leave Whiskey Beach. The threat here is eliminated while the investigation into Duncan's death continues, and we take the next steps to verifying the facts regarding the dowry, Edwin Landon, James Fitzgerald, and so on.
Verifying the facts regarding... is edging toward more lawyer talk.
Even when I practiced law, lawyer snark didn't bother me. She sliced some butter into a heated skillet, smiled at him while it sizzled.
Such a fine line between truth and snark. In any case, action's more satisfying than snark. We've got a shot, Eli, at proving he's the one breaking into Bluff House. Prove that, and it not only leads to hanging him for Hester's fall, and that's huge, I think, for both of us, but it adds weight to his association with Duncan. Link them together, and it's a short slide to incriminating him for murder.
A lot of soft spots on that path. She poured beaten eggs into the skillet.
They hounded you for a year over Lindsay's death, with less cause, with no evidence. I say we give Karma a hand and let the man who at the least played a part in that experience the same.
Is Karma another word for payback in this case?
You say potato.
She plated eggs, fruit, slices of whole wheat bread she'd toasted.
Why don't we eat in the morning room? We can watch the sun come up.
Before that, is it sexist for me to say I love watching you cook breakfast, especially in that robe?
It would be sexist if you expected or demanded it.
Slowly, she trailed her fingers down the side of the robe.
Enjoying it just shows you have good taste.
That's what I thought. They carried the plates, the coffee, into the morning room, sat in front of the wide bow of glass. Abra scooped up a bite of eggs.
To continue that thought,
she added,
it would be sexist for you to think you need to get me safely out of the way before you follow through on the plan to lure Susskind into the house.
I didn't say anything about that.
A woman in love is a mind reader.
God, he hoped not, though she'd already showed that aptitude too often for comfort. If we tried the lure, and if it worked, there's no need for both of us to be here.
Fine. Where will you be while I video him from the passage?
Expression placid, she popped a berry into her mouth.
I need to be able to contact you as soon as it's done.
Being a smartass before dawn's annoying.
So is any attempt to protect the little woman. I'm not little, and I think I've already demonstrated I can handle myself.
I didn't know I loved you when I first started talking about doing this. I wasn't able to open up to everything I feel for you. And it changes everything. He laid a hand over hers.
Everything.
I want the answers. I want the truth about what happened to Lindsay, to Gran, about everything that's happened since I came back to Whiskey Beach. I want them on what happened 200 years ago. But I could let it go. Every bit of it. If I thought finding those answers could hurt you.
I know you mean that, and it just...
She turned her hand under his so their fingers linked.
It just fills me. But I need the answers too, Eli, for us. So let's trust each other to take care of each other and find them together.
If you stayed at Maureen's, I could signal you when and if he comes in, then you could call the cops. They'd move in while he was here, caught in the act.
And if I'm with you, I can contact the police from right here, while you run your famous video camera.
You just want to play in the secret passage.
Well, who wouldn't? He hurt you, Eli. He hurt my friend. He would have hurt me. I'm not going to sit at Maureen's. Together, or not at all.
That sounds like an ultimatum.
Because it is.
She lifted her shoulders, let them fall in the most casual gesture.
We can fight about it.
You can get mad.
I can be insulted. I just don't see the point, especially on such a gorgeous morning when we're in love. The point I see, Eli, is I've got your back, and I know you've got mine.
What the hell was he supposed to do with that? It might not work.
Negative thinking's unproductive, plus past history and patterns say it will work. This could be over, Eli, or at the very least he could be in police custody, charged with breaking and entering, maybe destruction of property, by tonight, and he'd be questioned on all the rest.
She leaned forward.
When that happens, Wolf's gonna have his first taste of crow.
You had that ace up your sleeve, Eli replied.
It's karma time, Eli.
All right. But we're gonna work this out, account for every contingency. She poured them both a second cup of coffee.
Let's strategize.
While they talked, the sun broke over the horizon, splashing gold over the night-dark sea. Just another day, Eli thought when Abra dashed out for her morning class. Or it would seem so to anyone watching the movements, comings, the goings of Bluff House. He walked the dog, crossing the beach at a light jog and in full view of Sandcastle. To please Barbie as much as to form a picture, he spent a little time throwing the ball for her, letting her splash into the water, swim out again. Back home, she sprawled on the sunny terrace, and Eli went in to call his sister.
Boyden Madhouse, how are you, Eli?
Pretty good. He held the phone an inch from his ear as shrill shrieks threatened to break his eardrum. What the hell is that?
Selena strongly objects to being in timeout.
Trisha raised her own voice, and Eli made it 2 inches.
And the longer Sally screams and misbehaves, the longer she'll be in timeout.
What'd she do?
Decided she didn't want her strawberries at breakfast.
Oh, well, that doesn't seem...
So she threw them at me, which is why she's in timeout. I have to change my shirt, which further means she'll be late for daycare and I'll be late for the office.
Okay, this is a bad time. I'll call you later.
We're going to be late anyway, and I have to cool off so I don't give my beloved child a strawberry facial. What's up?
I dug up some old household and business ledgers. Really old, going back to the late 1700s into the early 1800s. I've been going through them pretty carefully, and I've come to some interesting conclusions.
Such as?
I'm hoping you have time to look them over yourself, and we'll see if your conclusions jibe with mine.
You don't want to give me a clue?
Boy, he really wanted to. But I don't want to influence you. Maybe I went off some shaky ledge?
You've got my attention. I'd love to play with them.
How about I scan you a few pages, just to give you a start? I should be able to come in, maybe the end of the week, bring the ledgers to you?
You could. Or Max, the currently time-outed Sally, and I could come up Friday evening, have a weekend at the beach, and I can play with them.
Even better. But there'll be no strawberries if they cause this reaction.
Usually she loves them, but girls do have their moods. I've got to go unshackle her. Get us out of here. Send me what you can, and I'll take a look.
Thanks, and good luck. Following his morning agenda, he went up for his laptop. He sat out on the terrace in view of Sandcastle, his trusty Mountain Dew on the table, as he scanned through his emails. He opened one from Sherilyn Burke first, began to read her updated report on Justin Susskind. The man hadn't spent much time at work since the last report, Eli noted. A day here and there, a handful of out-of-office meetings. The most interesting, Eli found, had been to a law firm where he met with an estate specialist, and stormed out, obviously angry. Didn't get the answers you wanted, Eli sympathized. I know just how you feel. Through the report, he followed Susskind as he picked up his kids from school, took them to the park, to dinner, then home. His brief visit with his wife hadn't gone any better than his meeting with the lawyer, as he'd left in visible temper to speed away. At 10:15 the night before, he'd left his apartment with a suitcase, a briefcase, and a storage box. He'd driven north out of Boston, stopping at an all-night supermarket for a pound of ground beef. He'd made a second stop an hour later, veering off the highway to a 24-hour box store where he'd purchased a box of rat poison. Ground beef poison. Without reading further, Eli surged to his feet.
Barbie!
He had a moment of sheer panic when he didn't see her on the terrace. Even as he raced forward, she scrambled to her feet from where she sat at the top of the beach steps. Tail happily wagging, she trotted to him. Eli simply went down to his knees, wrapped his arms around her. Love, he realized, could sometimes come fast, but it didn't make it any less real.
Fucker! Oh, the fucker!
Leaning back, Eli accepted the adoring licks.
He's not gonna hurt you. I'm not gonna let him hurt you. You stick with me, girl.
He led her back to the table.
You stay right here with me.
In response, she laid her head in his lap, sighed in contentment. He read the rest of the report, then emailed back his own, which started with,
"The bastard plans to poison my dog. If you're in Whiskey Beach, don't come here. I don't want him wondering who you are. I'm done waiting around for him to make the next move."
He gave her an overview of what his research had unearthed, and the basics of what he'd done and planned to do. Planned to do rather than what he wanted to do right that minute. Go straight to Suskind and kick the living shit out of him. Temper still raw and ripe, Eli took his work and his dog back inside.
No more going out by yourself until this bastard's behind bars.
He pulled out his phone when it rang, unsurprised to see Sherilyn's name on the display.
This is Eli.
Eli Sherilyn, let's talk about this idea of yours.
He heard the unsaid stupid, shrugged.
Sure, let's talk.
He wandered the house as they spoke because it served to remind him what he was fighting for. And it had come down to a fight for him, even if he was denied the satisfaction of physical blows. He walked to the third floor and the curved glass of the gable where he imagined writing one day, once the fight was done and won, once he'd secured safety for all he loved and his own self-respect.
"You've got some valid points," he said at length.
"And you're not going to listen to them?"
"I did listen to them, and you're not wrong. The thing is, if I step back from this, let the police handle it all, or even let you, I'm back where I was a year ago, just letting it all happen, letting the situation carry me instead of me carrying it. I can't go back to that. I need to do this for myself, for my family, and in the end, I want him to know that. I need that when I think of Lindsay, my grandmother, this house."
"You didn't believe his wife?"
"No."
"What did I miss?"
He lowered his hand to Barbie's head when she leaned against him.
"You said you had kids. You're married."
"That's right."
"How many times?"
She let out a laugh.
"Just the one. It's worked out pretty well."
"That might be it. You haven't gone through the dark side. Maybe I'm wrong, and that's what's coloring it, but I don't think so. The only way to be sure is to box him in. That's what I'm gonna do. Here, on my turf, in my place."
She let out a sigh.
"I can help."
"Yeah, I think you can."
When he'd finished talking to her, he felt lighter somehow.
"You know what?" he said to the dog. "I'm gonna work for a couple hours. Remind myself what my life's supposed to be about. You can hang with me."
He left the past and what would come behind it, and went down to surround himself with the now. 29. Abra swung into the market, list in hand. She'd finished back-to-back classes and a sports massage on a client prepping for a 5K, and polished it off with a last-minute cleaning in a rental cottage. Now she just wanted to grab what she needed and get back to Eli. Honestly, she thought, that's what she'd like to do for the rest of her life, get back to Eli. But tonight could prove to be the turning point for him. For them. The point where they could begin to leave the questions and the pain of the past in the past, and start working toward tomorrow. Whatever tomorrow brought, she'd be happy, because he'd brought love back into her life. The kind of love that accepted, understood, and, even better, enjoyed who and what she was. Could there be anything more magical and marvelous than that? She visualized lifting the little hand tote of baggage she still carried, then flinging it into the sea. Done and gone. But now wasn't the time for dreaming, she reminded herself.
Now was the time for doing, for righting wrong. And if there was some adventure mixed in, so much the better. She reached up for her preferred counter spray, biodegradable, no animal testing, dropped it in her basket and turned. She all but bumped into Justin Susskind. She couldn't stop the quick gasp, but tried to turn it quickly into a flustered apology, even as her heart kicked like a startled mule.
"I'm so sorry. I wasn't paying attention."
Praying she didn't tremble, she tried an easy smile she felt quiver at the edges. He'd cut his hair short, lightened it to a sun-streaked blonde. Unless he'd spent the last 2 weeks catching rays, he'd made use of a self-tanner. And she was reasonably sure he'd had his eyebrows waxed. He gave her one hard stare, started to move on. On impulse, she shifted, used her elbow, and knocked a few items from the shelf to the floor.
"God, I'm such a klutz today."
Crouching to retrieve them, she blocked his path.
"Isn't it always the way when you're running behind schedule? I need to get home. My boyfriend's taking me into Boston for dinner and a suite at the Charles, and I haven't even decided what to wear."
She rose with an armload of cleaning products, sent him an apologetic smile.
"And I'm still in your way. Sorry."
She stepped aside, began to shelve what she'd dropped, and resisted looking after him as she heard him walk away. "Now you know," she thought. "Or you think you know. You won't miss your opportunity any more than I could miss mine." She ordered herself to complete her list in case he was watching her. Even stopped to chat with one of her yoga students for a moment. "Everything's normal," she told herself. "Just a quick stop at the market before your big night in Boston." And because she was watching, she caught a glimpse of him sitting in a dark SUV in the lot as she put her market bags in the car. Deliberately, she turned the radio up, checked her hair, dabbed on some lip gloss, then pulled out to drive home just a few miles over the speed limit. As she turned into Bluff House, she watched in her rear view as Susskind continued on. Grabbing her bags, she dashed into the house.
"Eli!"
After dumping the bag, she made the next dash up the stairs and veered toward his office. As her shout had him up and out, they nearly ran into each other.
"What?
Are you all right?"
I'm fine. I'm good. I also just earned the Think Fast and Act Your Ass Off award. I literally bumped into Susskind at the market."
"Did he touch you?" Instinctively, Eli grabbed her arms, searched for injuries.
"No, no. He knew who I was, but I played dumb. Or rather, really smart. I knocked some things off the shelf so he couldn't get by me, then babbled about being clumsy and being in a hurry because my guy was taking me to Boston for dinner and a night of whoopee at the Charles."
"You talked to him? Jesus, Abra."
"At him? He didn't say a word, but he did wait for me to check out. He sat in his car in the lot, then followed me back. Eli, he thinks we're going to be out of the house overnight. It's his big chance. We don't have to count on him watching and seeing us leave. He's planning it all right now. It fell in our lap, Eli. It's on tonight. This is it."
"Was he following you? I mean, before you left the store?"
No, I don't think so. He had a basket. He had things in a basket, and I don't think he'd have gotten so close if he'd been watching me. Oh, it was fate, Eli, and fate's on our side."
He'd have called it chance, or maybe luck, but he wouldn't argue. "I got a report from Sherilyn. He stopped at two different markets, miles apart on the way to Whiskey Beach."
"Maybe he has a grocery store fetish."
"No, he's being careful, not buying his personal items from the same places he bought a pound of ground beef and a box of rat poison."
"Rat poison? I've never heard of anyone seeing rats. Oh, God."
Shock at first, then fury.
That son of a bitch! He plans to poison Barbie? That miserable excuse for a human being? It's a good thing I didn't know. I'd have given him another shot to the balls."
"Easy, Tiger. What time's our reservation?"
"A what?"
"For dinner."
"Oh, I didn't get that detailed."
Eli checked his watch. "Okay, we should leave about 6. You worked it out with Maureen?"
"Yes. They'll keep Barbie, so we'll just go as we planned. Leave here with the dog, drop her off at Maureen's, then circle back on foot to the south side, then..." "Crap."
She put her hands to her head, did a little dance in place.
Dinner date. I have to wear heels to make it look real. Okay, okay. I'll stuff some sneakers in my bag, change shoes for the jog back. And don't give me that look. Footwear's important.
We need to talk it all through again, and I need to fill you in on how Sherilyn's playing into it.
Then let's do it downstairs. I need to put away what I got at the market before my encounter. Then I need to figure out what to wear for our fake romantic evening slash ambush.
He went over every angle, then went over them again from a different direction. He spent time in the passage, then behind the shelves, checking the scope of the video camera, testing it. Just a backup now, he thought. If things went wrong, he had a secondary backup.
You're questioning yourself?
Abra said as she checked the lines and fit of the dress she'd put on over a black tank and yoga shorts.
I used to believe in the system. Absolutely. I was part of the system.
Now I'm going around it.
No, you're working through it, just in a different way. And even that's a testament, Eli, when the system failed you. You have a right to defend your home, and a right to do whatever you can to clear your name.
She added earrings, not only to complete the look, but because they boosted her confidence.
You even have the right to enjoy it.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Good, because I am. And I'm going to.
You look great.
I'm definitely taking you to dinner in Boston, and a night of whoopee when this is over.
I'd like that. But I have an even better idea. When this is over, you need to have the first of those parties you talked about. You need to have a blowout.
That is a better idea. But I'll need help with it.
Fortunately, I find myself not only free, but willing and able to help with it.
He took her hand. I think there's a lot we need to talk about after.
We have a long and, I predict, happy summer to talk about everything, anything.
He turned his wrist to check his watch.
It's 6 on the dot.
Then we'd better get started. He carried down the overnights while Abra gathered what they'd packed for the dog. Downstairs, Eli contacted Sherilyn. We're leaving the house now.
You sure about this, Eli?
This is how I want to handle it. I'll call again when we're back in.
All right, I'll move into position. Good luck.
He switched the phone to vibrate, slipped it back into his pocket. Here we go. Abra used 2 fingers to push up the corners of Eli's mouth.
Happy face. Remember, you're going out to dinner in a fancy hotel with a very hot woman, and odds are you're going to get lucky. Several times.
Since we're spending at least part of the evening in a dark passageway, in a dark basement, and potentially the rest of it dealing with cops, will I still get lucky?
Guaranteed.
See my happy face? They walked outside.
Do you know what I just love?
She asked him as she opened the back of the car for the dog, for the overnights.
I love that he's watching us right now, thinking he's the one who's getting lucky.
Eli closed the door, pulled her into his arms.
Let's give him a little show.
Happy to.
With enthusiasm, Abra wrapped around Eli, lifted her face for the kiss.
Teamwork.
She murmured against his mouth.
That's how we do things in Whiskey Beach.
He opened the passenger door. Remember, once we get to Maureen's, we need to move fast. We don't know how long he might wait.
Fast is my best speed.
When they pulled up at Maureen's, Eli grabbed the bag holding his change of clothes, Abra's shoes. Maureen had the door of the cottage open before they got to it.
Look, both of you, Mike and I have been talking. Too late.
The instant she was inside, Abra yanked down the zipper of her dress. As she wiggled out of it, Eli pulled off his suit jacket, loosened his tie.
If we just waited, watched, then called the police.
Something could spook him, Eli said on his way to their powder room with jeans and a black T-shirt. He could leave before they got there.
It's more that...
Abra stepped out of her heels as Eli closed the door.
He needs to have a part in this. I need to help him. We've been over this.
I know that, but if he really killed someone, he did.
To keep it simple, Abra sat on the floor to pull on sneakers.
It's likely he killed 2 people, and tonight we're starting the chain holding the anchor that's going to take him down for it.
You're not crime fighters,
Mike began.
We are tonight.
Abra hopped up as Eli stepped out.
We even look the part. Where are the kids? Upstairs, playing. They don't know anything about this, and we didn't want them to hear us talking you out of what they don't know anything about. They'll have fun with Barbie.